Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. As you can tell, we're broadcasting live, and it's so much fun down here at Crook's Corner. Come down and join us. Seated at the table with me now are Morton Neal and with Bill Smith, who's the great chef at and the author.
The great author.
Two great authors I'm surrounded by. And later on, we're going to be talking to other people who write about food, including our own Chapel Hill and Durham, Sarah Foster. We'll talk about her books and a new project that she's involved in, writing for Cottage Living magazine. Her editor, Kim Sinead, is here, and they'll talk about what they've been doing in Chapel Hill, getting ready for an upcoming issue of that magazine. Bill Lechtenberg, who will be my guest on North Carolina Book Watch this Friday and again on Sunday, is going to talk to us about presidents, and we've told him we're going to find out what presidents ate in the autumn. And Bill Smith, what are you putting on the table at Crook's Corner in the upcoming autumn?
Well, the thing everybody looks forward to are the oysters, and they are here. And we have
I can smell them. They smell good.
Yeah, they're right next to us here. We have fried oysters, and we're going to have oyster stew, and we're going to do maybe oyster pie, we thought, this year. And I don't know. We're gonna last year we had to do without for a long time because of the hurricanes had wrecked the oyster market because they had ruined the Gulf market, and that made all the rest of them really rare and expensive. And so we were 2 months late with them. So this year we're going to make up for it, I think.
What's your secret for oysters in terms of timing and also in selection, and where do you get them?
I got them from Tom Robinson here, and he gets them from a sort of a fan-shaped area that goes from middle of Virginia down to the middle of South Carolina, so they're fairly local. They are cold weather food. People always say the R months, which is what I pretty much do. They're not very appealing in the heat of the summer to me, really. I don't know. But
you know, I heard, Bill, that it's not about whether they're edible or not. It's about some kind of milky quality that they take on during the breeding season.
They alter. They alter. You can tell they do. And the secret of frying them, I just discovered years ago in Louisiana, is to use corn flour instead of cornmeal. And that makes all
what's
the difference.
What's the difference?
More finely ground. Yeah.
It's not as grainy.
Yeah.
I find that grainy texture that really most people in the South love just a little bit, not unpleasant, but I'd rather have it.
Yeah, I bought some seafood breading in New Orleans years ago, and we fried some stuff in it, and I thought, God, this is really good. And by then we'd thrown out the box. I had to go through the trash and find the box and read the ingredients, and the first ingredient was corn flour instead of cornmeal, and so I've used it ever since.
Is that called masa?
Masa it is now because we have so many Mexicans.
You told me that because I remember I told you that I'd gone to Commander's Palace and gotten the most delicious fried oysters, and it was kind of not exactly flaky but not grainy, and it tasted very corny.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, I know what that is. It's
awesome. Well, that's where I got that breading to begin with. So.
What else do you do? When I come in and order fried oysters, have they already been cooked?
No, we cook them to order. Yeah. No, you can't cook them in advance.
Got to come out hot.
Yeah. Oh, no, I would never do that. Yeah.
Well, I'm not accused. I'm just trying to learn. What are the other secrets? You roll them up in this corn flour and then throw them in?
It's half corn flour and half self-rising flour, and that gives it a big puffy crust, and with salt and pepper, and that's it. You know, and you cook them quickly, and you don't overcook them, and you need to eat them before they get cold.
Well, that's what's going on here. They're serving folks here are bringing out these great-smelling, and I kind of want to stop.
Well, where are they?
We'll get them in a minute. You can't talk with your mouth full. I've always been told.
It would be really good.
Yeah. Y'all ever have raw oysters here?
I haven't done it in a long time because I got sick of standing there shucking them. I kept stabbing myself.
And when you have them,
everybody wants them, and so you almost have to have a person, separate person, just to do nothing but that. So.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, the kitchen's so little, you know that. You know.
Well, Bill, I just have to say I've gotten lots of comments about your appearance on North Carolina Book Watch this weekend.
Oh yeah,
this weekend, and thanks for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
We'll go from food to history this week as we talk to Bill Lechtenberg, who will join us in a few minutes on this program and talk about the three presidents. Maybe we can get him to tell us what they ate or what they liked to eat. Now, other than oysters in the autumn, all of a sudden you go to the farmer's market and there are whole different kinds of things. The tomatoes seem to be gone.
Tomatoes are gone.
What is good?
Winter squash. Now we have baked squash soup now. One of those bright orange soups made out of
this. I've been waiting for that.
Well, we have it tonight. We have these are butternut squash soup, and then soon to follow will be something called a blue Queensland which is like a Hubbard. I've just found it. And
what's the blue part?
It's sort of bluish gray on the outside. They're beautiful. They're like blue pumpkins.
Oh.
Morton Neal, you've just come back. She's gonna wear us out because she's just come back from a gig writing for a new magazine. And can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can tell you about my magazine. It's called Garden and Gun, which gives everybody kind of a start up here in our little liberal community. However, I'm from Mississippi, and when I've told people in Mississippi that I'm writing for Garden and Gun, they were just as kind of speechless as people here. So,
are you writing about guns, or are you writing about the garden?
No, neither. I'm writing about Frank Stitt, who is a very well-known chef in the Deep South, maybe all over the South. He cooks in Birmingham. Highlands Grill was his original restaurant, and he's opened two more called Chef Fonfon.
Uh-huh.
And Bottega Grill, I think, an Italian restaurant and a French restaurant. And the French restaurant was just so French.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're live here at Crook's Corner. Can you hear that background music? You probably can even smell the fried oysters. Oh, man, they're fantastic. It's just driving me crazy because I could talk with my mouth full, but it wouldn't work so well. We're talking about food, and we're talking about food with the most beautiful women and the most informed women about food. Now, we've got, of course, Morton Neal is here with me to keep me honest. And we've got our own Chapel Hill, Durham, Sarah Foster. And she's brought with her editor at Cottage Living Magazine, Kim Sine. And they're going to tell us a little bit about a project that they've been doing in Chapel Hill. Sarah, tell us a little bit about how you persuaded Kim to come to Chapel Hill and work on a feature for Cottage Living.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I just had one of those fried oysters, and they are really good.
And I've had more than one of those.
Kim, you all are the food experts. You go all over the country, and you, I mean, it's competitive. Bill Smith's oysters are...
Absolutely, and I'm a Louisiana girl, so to say that about Crook's, that's something.
That's really great. Well, y'all, I got excited when I heard that you were here shooting. And it's not Garden and Guns. They're shooting with cameras, I think. And tell us, Sarah, tell us about the project and how you persuaded Kim to come here.
Well, I'm a contributing food editor for Cottage Living, and Kim is the food editor, and I have to come up with new ideas every month that we're going to shoot. And we actually shoot in season, which is really great. So we were shooting on Monday here at Crook's Corner for next July-August issue. And I thought it would be a really fun story in this issue if we did a story with Bill Smith just featuring like a great Southern cookout barbecue. I think Crook's has such a great patio. It's a really, wonderful atmosphere, which is part of why I think everyone loves to come here. So we created the story where we did recipes from Bill's cookbook and from my cookbook that I have coming out next spring.
You've got a third... let's don't get off track, but you have to talk about that. But
yeah,
keep
we'll
keep
talk
going.
About that later. So we came up with a story. I presented it to Kim, and she knows Bill because we shoot in Chapel Hill a lot. And when she comes to Chapel Hill, she always eats here. So we just decided to do a story with Bill because, Crook's is such a great restaurant. It's been around for a long time, and he's such a great chef.
I want to know how you find time to run your two wonderful Foster's markets and write a cookbook and fulfill this obligation to Cottage Living. I mean, do you come up with an article every month?
Every month we do something different.
Is it really fun?
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, it goes with what I do every day, but it also is just a different aspect of the business and the job. So I really enjoy it. It's fun.
Well, I want to find out what Kim, a Louisiana, I can't say girl or I'll get slapped, a Louisiana woman, is know, what got you here to Chapel Hill to make this a feature of your magazine?
Well, this area is just amazing with the restaurants and the chefs here. Karen Barker actually also does a lot of our recipes, and then Gene Anderson, who's also a local, is a contributor. So I don't know why this is just an amazing pocket of wonderful food people. So it was an easy choice, and then because Sarah's here, of course, she's our contributing food editor. And every time I come to Chapel Hill, I have to sneak into Crook's Corner. And last summer, Bill brought out these beautiful fresh tomato sandwiches with mayonnaise. So
it's all over for this season. It's kind of terrible. Kim, tell us a little bit about Cottage Living Magazine and how the Crook story will fit in. You know, we're going to have to wait till July to get it. We've got plenty of time to get a subscription, so we'll be sure we get
that. Right, but you can come here anytime and have Bill's ribs, which we're featuring. But
there are other good things besides tomatoes, so right. For sure.
But the Cottage Living is actually a Time Inc. magazine. And we're in Birmingham, Alabama, where we also publish Cooking Light and Coastal Living, Health Magazine, Southern Living. Southern Living, of course. Okay. So,
this
yes.
Time, I remember that Southern Living came out of North Carolina in the progressive farmer tradition.
Exactly.
And do you all still publish? I think progressive
farmers. We do,
exactly.
Progressive farmer is still very
We have to remember where the food comes
we
from.
We have to remember where the food comes from, exactly. So, Cottage Living was, we launched that in 2004.
Well, you've been there from the beginning, and I always wondered how you develop, you develop a collection of people that you could rely on to write for you and who both know what cooking is about and also have the ability to meet deadlines and write it up in a nice way. How do you find those folks?
It's really through strong relationships and word of mouth, of course, and then just reputation. You know, I mean, Cook's Corner, look at Sarah Foster, look at Karen Barker.
How did y'all get together?
You were brought on, I guess, even before I started.
Yeah, I was brought on through my co-author that I did my book Fresh Every Day with, and she introduced me to one of the editors there. I was there very early on, which was really great. But it's like Kim said, it's like any business. You just kind of build on relationships, and, you know, you meet people, and they introduce you to other great people. And
the food really brings people together.
Yeah, the food business, I mean, you know what it's like, Morton. I mean, you know, it's just you connect with each other, and I think you meet other interesting people through it and people that are doing the same thing. And like you said earlier, it's definitely the farmers as well. I mean, we all rely on them so
much. Well, food is something you have to share. It's not other kinds of writing where you can kind of hole up by yourself. You know, food is all about giving pleasure to people and getting together with people and
bringing people back to the table as well. And that's what we try to do with the Cottage Living, the food columns, is we really try to take classic, I guess, Americana recipes, but then what Sarah's so great at is using fresh ingredients and adding a fresh twist to something. But, you know, it might be macaroni and cheese, but she'll add some fresh herbs to it.
You know, you all have gotten me so excited, and Morton and Bill, about the revolution, I guess, in southern cooking. And it's a wonderful development, I think, in enriching our life, but our lives. One of the sad aspects of modern living, though, is that, as you say, we seldom gather around the table as families anymore. Everybody's going around in different directions. Is that just always going to be a fact of life, or are you going to get people back to the tables with these good recipes?
Well, I think you have to try to get people back to the table. I mean, I think that's all of our missions, whether you go out to a restaurant like Crook's and have dinner, or you're making recipes at home, or you're encouraging your kids to cook, to get in the kitchen and help you out. I think the key is to really just try to keep it simple so that it is doable for people. And I think that's one of the things Cottage Living, what we do with our recipes, you know, we make them really simple so they are doable for people and people have time to do them.
I love it when you don't scare us off with the recipe that it says, you know, that it says to somebody like me, hey, really, you can do this. You know, this is a great message.
And that's what Foster's Market is about. That's what we love about Crook's Corner as well. I mean, it's really great, classic, simple Southern food that's, you know, that brings people to the table.
Well, sir,
you know what? I just want to interrupt you because last time I was with you, we were touching on this. DG, it's about the pleasure principle. You know, you have to, I think Americans are so caught up in the work ethic that we've forgotten the pleasure principle. It's about allowing yourself the pleasure of getting together at a table and enjoying the food and enjoying each other and just making the time for it.
Well, we've got to take a break, and there's so much more I want to ask both Kim, Sine, and Sarah Foster, particularly Sarah, about your books and your upcoming books. And if you don't get to it tonight, will you come back to WCHL? We can do a whole program on
absolutely
all your activities.
Kim has a book coming out too, so we'll have to talk about that.
Bring her on. We get her back here any way we can.
Any excuse to come back to Chapel Hill.
Well, thanks so much for sharing with us the inside view of what y'all were up to here, and we'll look forward to Cottage Living in the July issue of next year about Crook's Corner. We're going to take a break. We'll be back, and we're going to be talking to presidential historian William Lichtenberg, and we'll try to find out what the president say. We'll be right back. Fried oysters. It's because Bill Smith is bringing them out of the kitchen as quick as we can eat them. Come on down and join us. We've been talking about food. I'm interested in talking about food with, and Morton, I hope you are too, with William Lichtenberg, the nation's, and we say, and it's true, I think, the finest living historian of the American presidency.
I'm interested in talking about anything with Bill Lichtenberg.
Thank you, Morton.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm interested. We're featuring you on WCHL this week, and you were on talking about Franklin Roosevelt on Monday, Harry Truman on Tuesday, and tomorrow you'll be talking, we'll be talking about Lyndon Johnson. And then on Friday night at 9:30 on UNC-TV, North Carolina Book Watch, on Sunday. So this is William Lichtenberg week. Tell us about the presidents and their, does food play any part in American government and American politics or American history of the presidency?
Oh, sure. Sometimes it defined presidents. Thomas Jefferson would gather people around his table when he wanted to get legislation through Congress. And among the many things he invented was the dumbwaiter. And to assure privacy, he had a French chef prepare food that congressmen were not used to having, and wines they certainly weren't used to having, and he would serve them, his guests himself, by having the food brought up on a dumbwaiter, and that way he was able to preserve privacy.
Good confidence.
Yeah. Sometimes presidents are defined by their poor taste in food. Bill Clinton would be an example of that.
Somebody we've heard of that McDonald's thing.
Right, yeah, he was regarded as somebody who was partial to Whoppers, and it fascinated the notion that there was something déclassé about Bill Clinton.
But, and it almost killed him, didn't it?
And that's also true. And this was also when Lyndon Johnson succeeded Jack Kennedy. Under Jack and Jacqueline, you had a sense that you were in a world of haute cuisine, and all of a sudden, you were Texas barbecue, and things a lot less tasty than Texas barbecue.
I bet LBJ. The chef quit when Lyndon came into office.
Yes, it was.
It must have been a shock.
Now, whoa, about barbecue now. You know where we are.
No, that's what I'm saying. Things a lot worse than barbecue, but still, even barbecue, fellow like you, DG, would admit is not haute cuisine.
No, and it raises the question, Bill, about whether or not, in terms of managing the presidency, whether it's great to have barbecue, or are people really suckers for this haute cuisine? I don't know. But anyway, we're real excited. We're broadcasting live from Crook's Corner, and We're thrilled that our boss, Jim Hefner, just walked in the door. I don't know whether it's to hear more radio or to eat, because everybody is here at Cook's Haven for fried oysters.
Yeah.
What about Franklin Roosevelt? You know more about Franklin Roosevelt than anybody else in the world. What did he eat?
Well, thank you, D.G. He was greatly affected by the years that he spent in Georgia, in Warm Springs, and his favorite meal there was Country Captain, which was a chicken dish with curry, and he would serve that and ask for it whenever he came to Georgia. The food that they tried to persuade him to eat, that he drew a line at, was possum. he gave it a try to prove that he was a good old boy, that he wasn't a New Yorker, that he was a sure enough Southerner, but he balked at that.
Well, I wonder that, you know, we got Morton Neal with us. Did you ever come up with a good recipe for
possum?
For possum? Did you ever find one that you would eat?
I have never eaten possum. My grandfather had a rule that anything that he killed, we needed to eat. And so he would kill squirrels and doves off his property, and we would cook them up and eat them, and they all tasted pretty much like chicken. And not bad. But here in Chapel Hill, possum has a different connotation. I've got a long story. I'm not going to interrupt Bill by my story.
Tell it.
I was going home one day, and there was a kind of a roadblock. A policeman was in the middle of the road, and you know, traffic was halted. And we were wondering what had happened. There must have been some accident or something. No, a possum was crossing the road, and the police was escorting the possum across the road so that the possum would not become roadkill.
Oh.
So in Chapel Hill, we honor our possums. We don't eat our possums. We escort them across the road.
We don't believe in capital punishment or killing possums.
That's wonderful. A quick story on possum. I was walking on the Potomac towpath with my son and grandchildren a few years ago with a dog, and the dog killed a possum. And we all felt very bad about that until a minute later the possum got up and walked away. And that was the first time I ever knew what the phrase playing possum meant, that it was really true. It worked like that.
Well, that's incredible.
Clever animal.
Bill Lichtenberg, your book, The White House Looks South, includes lots of stories about Franklin Roosevelt, but also about Harry Truman. And you get this, you know, I have this impression that Harry Truman wasn't interested all that much in food, that he was interested in what the business. Am I
right? You're right on. He had a deep Confederate tradition, and as a result, he could eat Northern food and Southern food, but he didn't care about either of them very much. So I think you're correct. If I searched my mind for several hours, I still couldn't come up with a food story about Harry Truman.
That's incredible. Now, Lyndon Johnson's taste, you mentioned earlier, went to Texas food and Texas barbecue. But he had aspirations, didn't he, for a little bit, you know, for putting on airs from time to time. How did he do it, and did he like the cooking? I mean, was he intimidated by the Kennedy chefs that they left behind?
Yeah, he was intimidated. He would talk about the Kennedy people as the Harvards. And he felt, having gone to San Marcos, a small teacher's college in Texas, that he wasn't Ivy League. He wasn't in the elite, and that bothered him. But you tell Lyndon Johnson that he wasn't as good as anybody else on this globe, and you get a really mad Texan.
But I bet Lady Bird had some pizzazz when it came to parties and menus and things.
Well, she served simpler food, certainly, than Jacqueline did. But she was such a wonderfully warm, gracious person that I'm not sure people paid as much attention to the food as they did being in the room with a very nice, decent human being.
That is the most important thing.
Well, she cooked for the speaker.
Oh, that is right. And she cultivated Sam Rayburn, who was a bachelor, and that helped Lyndon Johnson's career enormously.
I think you taught me that in your book, The White House Looks South, that,
yeah.
that was the one of the that Lady Bird was one of the keys to Lady Bird's cooking was one of the keys
oh,
to Lyndon Johnson's ascendancy.
That's right. He was just another congressman from Texas, but when he was taken up by Sam Rayburn, Mr. Speaker, that made a lot of difference.
Made
to
a big difference. Well, Bill Lichtenberg, one more question before we take a break, and that is, you've been in Maine most of the summer, and you've been eating lobsters and halibut. You come back here, and you've had tasted Bill Smith's fried oysters. Is he in the league with the Maine cooking?
I just wish you'd stop talking to me, DG, so I can get back to the oysters.
Well, we're here at Crook's Corner talking with Bill Lichtenberg. He's demanded that we take a break, so we'll take a break so he can eat an oyster. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. You hear something in the background? It's Crook's Corner. People are talking, and they're having such a great time. And one of the reasons they're having such a great time is that Bill Smith is bringing out just platefuls of fried oysters. And it's Bill.
Yes.
First day. Is this
first week?
First week of oyster.
Yeah.
So we didn't get the very first. We've been talking to Chapel Hill Durham's own Sarah Foster, and Morton Neal is acting as my co-host. And so we had you guys kind of speculating about seasonal foods and what to do in the autumn, and you've had some time to think about it. Sarah Foster, at Foster's Market, how do you adjust to the seasons as they come and go?
Well, the first thing everyone wants is pumpkin bread. Everything's about pumpkins. So October comes, you know, late September, early October, we start making pumpkin bread, pumpkin pies, pumpkin cookies. So that's a big thing for us.
Bill, other than ribs, which are not really seasonal, oysters, squash, which is like pumpkins, what else do you pull off the trees and put on people's platters at Crook's Corner?
Well, actually, I was thinking of roasts, which don't go on trees, but it's time to start doing, we do an ossobuco with pork shanks, which is really good. And as soon as
that doesn't mean a thing to me.
It's roast, it's like little slices of ankle or whatever, of pig, and it's like, and it's braised in white wine and served.
I've eaten pig's feet before.
Well, this is right, this is the next thing up. So.
It's better, actually.
Yeah, it's much better, yeah.
That's traditionally it's veal.
Yeah, but I found these people that do pork ones, and it's really.
Bill is doing the southern version.
Yeah. And I'll start making corned ham soon. I've already talked to Eliza McClain about
he's famous
hams.
For that.
And so, yeah, I'm thinking of roasts and stews.
Bill, you're famous for going out and seeing the farmer's market, and finding the fresh food. When you're dealing with animals, is it the same thing, or can you just pull the animals off the shelf?
It's becoming like that more. It's harder. That hasn't really gotten really going here that much. Now, there's some of it. We can get pork, and there's some more meat people at the market. I haven't dealt with them yet. Have you?
Yeah, there's some really great products out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would encourage everyone, if you don't already go to the Durham and the Carborough Farmers Market, you need to get out there
because
there's some great, great products.
Like what?
Well,
cheese. I mean, things other than produce, cheese, farm fresh eggs from, you know, chickens that actually get to walk around in the yard and lay their eggs in a nest.
Somebody that's selling pork besides Sarah, too. There. I mean, besides Eliza, I noticed the other day.
Yeah, there's several different people that sell pork. Eliza was selling Saturday when I was there this really, really great chorizo sausage that was so good. Soap. There's all kinds of, goat smells.
I'm not going to eat that goat smell.
But it's really, it's just really a great, fun way to spend your Saturday morning if you have time to do it and really take advantage of everything that, you know, we have to offer around here.
Yeah, and it keeps your money in the community.
Yeah, that's real important.
And it supports a whole culture of people that are trying to, you know, live good and do right and all that kind of stuff.
Morton, you've been thinking about this, and you've got your wonderful book of recipes based on Bill's recipes. What are you thinking about in the fall? Or things to put on the table?
Beef stew. And I have a very good beef dobe recipe, which is really beef stew. But the great thing about stews is you don't have to have the best meat. I mean, if you can't get a really great piece of beef or pork, you can get, you know, regular grocery store beef and just cook it to death. And by the time you've cooked it, braised it for 3 hours, you know, with some red wine and some carrots and some onions and some mushrooms, it's good. And that's what fall is about to me. It's those stews, those braises. Yeah,
Bill's right. You kind of come in out of the yard, off the grill, and you want to crank up your oven and start roasting things in the oven.
You just need to smell it. It smells good.
Well, the season, I mean, you know, today was just a little bit cooler. Mm-hmm. It gave us a signal that those times are coming. The acorns are starting to drop, and those kinds of signals let us know that something's a little bit different.
Persimmon pudding is not...
I'm not far away. I made a caramel cake today because it was cool. You can't make it in hot weather. The icing. So today I made the first caramel cake. So.
Where is that?
It's back there.
Are we going to get to try
you
that
are.
Later?
It's not as pretty as it will be soon. And a few more tries.
As long as it tastes good.
Yeah, I'll bring some out of it.
That sounds really good. And by the way, if you joined us late, we're broadcasting live from Cook's Corner. And we're talking now to with Morton Neal, who's my co-host, and with Sarah Foster from Foster's Market, and our own Bill Smith, the chef here at Cook's Corner. Sarah Foster, we just got a minute or two, and I've got 1,000 questions for you, but the one that's at the top of the list is, are you writing a third cookbook?
I am. I have a cookbook coming out next spring called Casual Cooking, and it's just what we were talking about earlier, ways to encourage people to get a great meal on the table in not a lot of time, so hopefully more people will enjoy spending time eating together and cooking together.
Are these recipes coming from Foster's Market or from your experience in your home or from what you've watched other people do? And where?
It's a little bit of everything. I mean, I think, you know, as a cook, you know, you kind of collect from everyone, from either eating out or eating with friends or a lot of different people that cook at the market and the way that they cook and things that I cook at home. So definitely a combination of a lot of different people.
Well, y'all, we got to quit. I mean, we got to stop and eat. It's almost 7 o'clock, and it's been a live program from Cook's Corner, one of the most fun things that we do. Bill Smith, to be in your kitchen is a real treat, and to eat your food is even better. And Morton Neal, thanks so much for helping me. It's always wonderful to be with. Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
Thank you.